Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 137 of the Westmarch Workshop. Reaper of Souls turns 4 and more. We'll be doing things a little bit differently on this episode. Unfortunately, we are on the eve of PAX East, so Leviathan will not be joining us as he's going through and prepping for the convention and all the news coverage that he'll be doing for BlizzPro across the various Blizzard entities, as well as just getting out there, having fun, seeing folks. We'll have while Diablo itself doesn't have an official presence at PAX East, we've got Brandy and a lot of other people from the community, Thunderclaw, people from Reddit and such that will be there. So, well, we will have at least some little community things to offer. Going into the next episode, once we see what PAX East all has to bring. But, like it says in the episode title, as many of you probably already knew, Reaper of Souls just celebrated its 4-year anniversary, and to commemorate that event, I wanted to take a little bit of a trip down memory lane here. It was almost 4 years ago to the day, a popular streamer and some guy who talked just way too much. Got together and started a little show on Twitch to celebrate all things Diablo. Their first few episodes were definitely a bit on the rougher side. It did take them a bit to find their footing. But after a handful of episodes, they're finally joined by another extremely passionate player, and well, that little show just started to take off from that point forward. Of course, I'm talking about us here on the Westmarch Workshop. We too have now been around for 4 years. Just almost like I said, to the day. We turned 4 on April 2nd, and here we are recording this episode on April 4th. And along the way, the show has had its own share of challenges. I just moved into a new place, and here I am. My webcam doesn't work, and my upload speed sucks. So if you're watching this on Twitch here tonight, or if you're later catching this on YouTube, yeah, it's just the intro screen. There is no video, just the lovely sound of my voice and nothing else to entertain you. And if this would be the one episode, if you're not watching the video and just listening to the audio, well, I guess until we get to the community section, you're not really missing all out on all that much. But over the years, some of the faces on the show have changed. We lost some members, gained some members, had some members come back. Real life tends to hit you pretty hard and fast sometimes, and your priorities just have to shift. Schedules can become conflicted. We've had to change the format of the show here and there. We used to be weekly, we've gone to bi-weekly, and even then we still miss some episodes, and we both Leviathan and I have probably done far more solo episodes than either of us would have cared to do. But the one thing that's always remained the same is our dedication to the community. Of course, that means you, our listeners. For better or for worse, the Diablo community itself has always been extremely passionate, if not just a tad bit overzealous at times. But that's just natural because we all love this game. And right now, all of our eyes are currently on the future, and well, kind of got some bad news. Not too bad news. If we were going to have a PTR for season 14, it likely would have started by now. There is still kind of a little bit of a leeway based on other seasons and PTRs that maybe we might get hit something with next week, but it doesn't look that likely. And this kind of confirms everyone's worst fears that Diablo 3 is in the quote-unquote maintenance mode. And I did do the finger quotations even though I'm not on video right now. If you look at like the forums or Reddit or Twitter, you'll see all the accusations: dead game, you should go play Path of Exile, you should play this or that. But the biggest thing that I always find so surprising is that people continue to scoff at the notion that, Team 3 is working on something at the moment. You don't just go hiring over 20 new jobs in the last few months for a dead franchise. And I can definitely tell you that they're not hiring 20 people in order to do a port over to the Switch. No, sir. They've had a lot of experience over the last few years going through and porting the games over to console. and I don't think that they're really in any need of assistance, nor do they need senior artists or creative designers and such in order to do a port. They're working on something new. And while we don't exactly know what it is that they're working on, you all know I like to call it Diablo Next as opposed to Expansion 2 or Diablo 4, because we're not exactly sure. The more things point towards Diablo 4 than it does a new expansion, we do at least know that they're working on something. It's like Blizzard's worst-kept secret that they just will not admit to, but that's just the way that Blizzard is. They're not going to confirm anything until it's ready to be released. And with that, it means that whatever it is that they're working on could still be a few years out. But it's more or less to say, don't worry, we'll get it one day. And in the meantime, it's okay to be burnt out. It's okay to want to try something new, get a fresh perspective, see what other games offer, something that Diablo 3 might be missing. It's okay to just play other action RPGs or other genres completely, just to go and see what ideas that you could get of what the next version of Diablo could be, what the next generation action RPG could be. And instead of just going through and being like Diablo 3, dead game, you should play this game or that game, provide feedback. What is it that you enjoy in, say, Path of Exile or Grim Dawn or the new expansion for Titan Quest? Didn't ever really expect myself to be saying that one as of a couple months ago. But find those things that you enjoy in those games, things that you think that Diablo 3 or Diablo Next could include, that it could do better. What is it that you want in this next game? Because, I mean, they really are working on something, and the hiring page just continues to add more and more and more jobs. They're likely past like that kind of conceptual phase that we've talked about on the show a lot. No longer are they looking only for senior positions. They're looking for some associate positions. They're looking for just the normal bog standard positions: engineers, artists, all that have you. They're looking for specifics, things like dungeon designers and other concept artists, visual effects, lighting artists, and everything of that nature. So there's a lot going on, and we as a Diablo community have a lot to look forward to. I also want to go through and say that the accusations that, well, Blizzard just doesn't care about Diablo are definitely untrue. PAX East, Heroes is having a really big unveil tomorrow. We're recording this on April 4th. The panel for Heroes of the Storm will be April 5th. That's a Thursday, depending upon when you're going through and listening to this. It might be old news by the time that you listen to this, but all evidence right now points to Diablo Hero going through and getting announced, and not just any Diablo Hero. It seems that people are going through and talking about going through and maybe having Deckard Cain join the Nexus in some form of capacity. Those rumors have thrown me for a loop, and I don't know if that's 100% going to be true. Is Deckard Cain going to be an actual hero, or is he just going to be like an announcer, or is it going to be some sort of like new play mode that he is involved with? Because they're wanting to go through and kind of explore, the lore and what exactly is the Nexus itself. So maybe he might be involved in that way, but hey, if we do get Deckard Cain as a hero, that'd be awesome. I don't know how many of you remember the old Diablo 3 April Fool's joke from many, many years ago where they announced the Archivist class. I think that's actually before the game itself even launched. They had stuff like Lornado, or a big tornado full of books and papers. But there's also my favorite ability that I hope that they bring over was just called Shh. And in it just has Deckard Cain sitting there in the little video, and he does shh, and then explodes. That's it. It's just, he kills himself, more or less. Just boom. That'd be a perfect ultimate. And of course, there's the, stay a while and listen. You could just do like an AoE stun, puts everyone to sleep. That'd be great, right? But yeah. So Blizzard as a whole is still dedicated. Diablo is a part of Blizzard. It's an important franchise to them as a company, and they'll still continue to maintain and support it. It's not being forgotten, so don't worry or don't fret none about that. But besides that, there's not a whole lot that's been going on. Season 13 continues to go through and pound on. Now, a lot of people are going through and saying that this is one of the best seasons that they've ever played, and just because everything has been so well balanced. And I one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of times people like aren't even playing like just the top meta builds. Like people are finally getting to the point where they're happy with the game itself. Like they're content going through and just, hey, I can go and just play myself like a Jade build or a Zunimasa or a Pestilence and just go through and do like Greater Rift 80, 85 solos. I don't have to push like 100, 110, 120 like the big meta builds are. They've gotten themselves to a point that they feel like they've really accomplished something, and that's enough for them, that they go through and they have their fun. It's just continuing to grate at me at no end that I've just had zero time to play it this season because the Imperius portrait is just sitting there and just taunting me the entire time. Like, this is like the one thing I have to have. Imperius is my bro. It's like I never thought I'd find an angel that I liked more than Tyrael, but it was Imperius. I know everyone says that he is an asshole, and you're 100% right, he is, but I don't care. I love him. And I've got to get that portrait, for Guardian, and I've had zero time to go through and play the game lately. And like I said earlier in the pseudo intro, which I think I'm kind of still on, is that life comes at you fast, and so just had a lot of stuff going on that has made it so I haven't been able to dedicate as much time to the game as I wanted. But it's a hell of a time to, for that to all line up when there's not too much going on, so I don't feel I'm missing out on a lot. And that's okay. And we at the WestWorks Workshop will still be here once that news finally breaks. Once Diablo Next gets announced, we'll be there, front row, hopefully literally front row, to the announcement of whatever that game, takes shape as, in order to go and give you guys as much information as we possibly can when that does come to pass. And this of course is going to be a bit of a shorter episode, not having a video and just some other stuff kind of kills it. And I'm sure we'll have a little bit more to talk about on the next episode once Steven's back from PAX East and all that, and we'll see the new Diablo hero for Heroes of the Storm, and I'm sure whatever theory crafting and ideas that we could get from that going from there. But we've got a lot of community stuff to go and catch back up on, and so we're gonna dive into that a little bit here. And so some of these emails are coming for a while ago, and if you go through and see, and I'm now reading your email, a month and a half later, I'm sorry. I really am. But hey, we got to it eventually, right? And that's the important part. And so this first email here comes from Chandler. Says, "Sup, fellas. Just as a quick aside, I did get another Blizz-related tattoo, but not Diablo this time. I got Mercy, and if I can get a good photo taken, I'll post it on the Twitters. Having played Grim Dawn since its alpha, though not recently after the expansion, and playing Path of Exile heavily for the past year, I'm just picking up Woolson and having a blast, that I wanted to chime in on what I'd like to see from the next Diablo game. My ARPG background being in Diablo 2 and Diablo 3. First, if the next iteration of Diablo isn't made on the CryEngine like Woolson is, or on even a better game engine, I will be sorely disappointed as Woolson graphically has me spoiled when it comes to an ARPG. Second, I'd like to see a skill progression system of the like from Diablo 2, Path of Exile, and Wilson, but fixed. Your skill tree stays the same, and if you want to make an adjustment, you have to re-level a character. It has me for playing Path of Exile has always made it so that with each new season, I choose something new to play, and never seem to run out of things to do with it, because leveling so high in the time I have played only allows me to play maybe one or two builds, and I can't just swap my entire build up as easily as D3. In Path of Exile, changing a build drastically involves a lot of currency or simply just starting another character. And in Wilson, the only option is to restart. While it can be annoying to re-level, it gives you something to drive for and can help extend the life of the game since you'll be driving for something new. And this is something I know Steven and I have talked about a lot, and it has its benefits and it has its cons, that level of permanence. While there's, the kind of the hardcore aspect of it in a attachment that level of permanency creates with your character, it does of course make it difficult to change. You've dedicated all of this time into this one individual character in this build. If you wanted to try something new or different, it's a big investment, as opposed to in Diablo 3, if you want to go from, say, playing a Arathma Necromancer to an Inarius or a Pestilence, you just swap out your gear and that's it, you're good to go. You might have to dedicate some time to farming up some better gear, but at least the play style you can immediately jump into. But that definitely is one that comes down to personal preference, and it'll be interesting to see what the devs, take from that feedback going into the next game, because that is a common complaint ever since the beginning of Diablo 3, and we'll have to see. The third thing is that I want trading back. I want to be able to give my buddy something I found that his build needs, so that way we can play more challenging content at the same time. I also love that Path of Exile has trading that allows me to find items and sell them to get what I wanted, guaranteed. However, the Diablo team would like to take the current trading system and make it better than Path of Exile's current trading iteration, with a much better synchronous within the game and based on currency or currency-based trading system that never involves gold or real money. Diablo could probably see an influx of players coming back to it permanently from Path of Exile. Again, that's another one, trading. Always a sore subject, and this one I feel actually has people a bit more rooted in their opinions. Because there's a lot of people out there that prefer the not being able to trade. Though Path of Exile does solve that with its solo self-found mode. And maybe that's something that we could get in the next iteration of Diablo. That it does really depend on what direction that they take the Diablo game. Do they go back and really hunker down on kind of those core things of an ARPG, trading, isometric view, skill trees and such, or do they, begin to evolve it and take it steps out of the ARPG genre and something a bit more blurred, something like a Guild Wars or something, closer to that, like Destiny or something along those lines. Fourthly, I'd like to see a better currency system than gold. Gold is fine and could be used to buy minor crafting items or just simply to buy cosmetic dyes and repair gear, but nothing major. I'd like to see a currency system like Path of Exile where we have different crafting items that change gear in different ways, like the bounty items and cube recipes we now have. I feel that Diablo could take what Path of Exile has done with the crafting system and make it even more interesting, as well as having a currency that can drop in-game and be used in the trading market, like Path of Exile. Now, this is something that Diablo 3 kind of has, in that you can think of their crafting materials as that form of currency. Or going a step back to Diablo 2, where gold literally was nothing more than just gambling and repairing. Diablo 3 just takes it one step farther in that it's something that you can use to level up your legendary gems faster. But if you go back to Diablo 2, it's the crafting materials were the main form of currency. Stone of Jordans, chips or P-gems. were really, really big, and that was things that a lot of times people would base, the valuation of items. How many SOJs is this item worth? Can I trade that item for, 40 P gems or 40 chips? And that's something that they could go back to. It's more of a diversification of currency more than, a completely different currency system. Something a bit like what a lot of MMOs have, that whether they have different badges or merits or, veiled Argonite or whatever you want to call it, these different types of resources or crafting items are in essence just different types of currency that could be, built into a better crafting or trading system, like you said. Cinco, as far as skills go, I personally am very disappointed with Diablo 3's rune system that it's too easy to change everything around as much as you want. In Wolcen, the skills are unlocked or learned, and they have runes that you can swap on the fly. However, I don't like that as the skill level ups that you unlock and all the runes, and again, have a fully open availability of how to change your skills. What I'd like to see is similar to Wolcen in that each skill levels up and gains damage scaling as you use it, so that it's still useful and has a rune tree for your character, but you have a limited number of skill rune points as it levels up. So you can either upgrade all of your skills to like a medium degree or max 1 to 3 skills out at a time. So if you want to try a different setup with the same skill tree, even if you level another character, you can always reset your character's rune choices. The way I see it is that every skill has, say, like 10 runes. First, through your damage base, it makes the skill do more damage. Then caps would be normal, so that way you can maybe change the functionality or maybe make it useful as a support skill, and other things that you might, easily want to invest in. Runes that are like 4 to 7 are damage or minor amounts of extra utility, and then like runes 8, 9, and 10 are major skill interaction changers but require heavy investment into the skill. So that way, if you want to play with this one with a particular interaction, you can't upgrade all of your skills to say level 6, and you just have to invest in two that you can get to that level, and then like the maybe only 1 or 2 other skills that you can actually take it to the last tier to unlock different functionality for these skills and change up your build. You might have the same like 6 skill sets, but it plays very differently because I decided to unlock the last trait in these 2 skills as opposed to some other ones. And this is something we've kind of talked a little bit about because this also matches a bit what World of Warcraft did with the artifact system and kind of what they're doing in Battle for Azeroth, and that you have more customization options to your character. And it's something that I too would like to see. Some form of, instead of the focus being on leveling up your character, it's leveling up your skills themselves. And maybe not, say, have a skill tree for your class, but maybe each individual skill has a skill tree in and of itself, and you dictate how much experience you put towards them, or have a type of currency system that you grind with experience that you can then trade in to unlocking those skills. Something that Star Trek Online does, that after you hit max level, every level that you gain, you get a skill point that you can then put into those talent trees, though you're limited to how far that you can take certain skills. You have X amount that you can put in, whereas other skill trees, you actually can fully max out everything given you play the game long enough. Kind of like the original EverQuest alternate advancement. Systems like that unlock new features, skills, passives, or procs. It kind of would take away that build identity from the items that you equip to the skills that you select, or the skill levels that you put into your character, and the items that you then equip on top of that would be supplementary. And his final thoughts were that kind of wraps up my thoughts, and if you have any more ideas, I'll shoot them your way. I very much looking forward to hearing your opinions on this email, and want to say keep up the good work. Even though I haven't played D3 for the last couple of seasons, I still listen to every podcast just to hear you guys talk. And we thank you very much for that, and I do hope to go through and see the Mercy tattoo. I know that we have featured some of his previous tattoos here on the show. If I missed it on Twitter, I'm sorry. Go ahead, shoot us an email back at West March Workshop so we can go through and get it on the show. But I definitely agree. I would like to see a more robust skill system. I think that's one thing that Diablo Next could do in order to make, I guess, the game engaging. I'm not sure if that's like the proper word, but it's just something that adds a bit more identity to what it is that you're playing, or permanence to your character, something that connects you a bit more to what it is that you're playing. I'm not just playing, a necromancer or something that you see a lot from the top end players now in the seasons. They'll level a demon hunter real quick, knock out some conquests, and be able to use that for like a multi-shot build that's easy to gear out, so they can go and start speed running your Torment 13s, and then going through leveling up, say, a crusader or a necromancer, in order to do like focused solo pushes to get the legendary gems up, or begin to join groups to do rat runs to get the paragon levels up, to then switch back to whatever it is that their final class is that they're going to make pushes for at the end of the season. It's not even that you even have a kind of a sense of permanency to a class anymore. It's more, it's like I'm playing D3 and I'm going for this, and I'm going to play these four classes to get there. Anything that they would do to make it feel more like, I really feel like I'm a monk player or a witch doctor player, and not so much that to the point where it's just because I only play a witch doctor that I have that, but I feel more of a connection with my class because, hey, look at all the dedication and time that I put into this guy, that I've unlocked like these skill trees or this skill orb or what have you. For this particular class, other people that are playing other classes can go and look and be like, oh, cool, I wish I had the time to go and try that out. Not saying that it has to be like too big of a time investment, but kind of like, say, in World of Warcraft, you could switch from being a rogue to a death knight if you chose, but it would take quite a bit of a time investment, not just to level up the character, but also to go through and get them geared, level up your artifact weapon to get all of the what is it, the Netherlight Crucible traits unlocked. It requires a bit of a grind, but once you're there, you're more or less on equal footing. But it really makes you feel like, yeah, like I'm a rogue, type thing. And that's what I'm looking forward to in the next Diablo game. If they could bring back like that fantasy of having that identity with the class that you play. And he does have one more follow-up, and I did want to touch on the skill tree arrangement. I do really like what Wilson did by making multiple trees that you can mix and match them and rearrange them however you want. But the trees make sense in the genealogical choices along the way. Path of Exile can at sometimes be way too overwhelming, but I don't feel enough of investment in Diablo 3, so somewhere in between those two, similar to Wilson, would be great. And if you're not sure, I know a lot of the people listening to the show probably already know what Wilson is, but it is another kind of like next-gen ARPG that is kind of out there. They have just a very small beta test client available. Not a lot of content just yet, but it caused a lot of buzz just a couple months ago. Riker did some videos on it. A lot of people are still talking about it. And I'm really, really looking forward to testing it out myself. I haven't had time to play Diablo 3, let alone another ARPG. But I would like to see, what their take is on an ARPG. We've got another email here. This one comes in from Funktropus. Oh boy, as always, we're in for a treat here. Sup, fellas. The RNG razzle dazzle continues. Some more specific thoughts following your thoughts, which followed my thoughts, which followed Nine's thoughts. I totally agree with the devs that making skill runes hard to find, such as the one that might have a crap time becoming a multi-shot witch doctor or whatever, when that is all that one wants to be, Rather make it, say, a skill or gear upgrade that's easy to find, but say, alchemical horodric recipes more and more complicated as the power increases. Like, how about this for skills? There are four basic elements, your poison, lightning, fire, ice, and that each element has a low grade drop, like a bug land or something, when you that you can pick up fairly often. The thing is, but in order to maximize your poison skill or whatever, you gradually have to drop more and more of those bug glands into each recipe. This opens up a crap ton of different alchemical things, or in order to increase the more alchemical recipes, mixing poisonous bug glands with, say, electrical trap shards or whatever, these horodric cubes generate these maybe a paralysis skill, and that this opens up the ability to slow enemies with skill runes, and that maybe fire and ice can generate like AoE effects. This way, one could easily tinker with the horodric cube, trying out different ingredient combos to unlock different skill types. In addition, just like gems in D3, progress from regular gems to royal gems, and then perhaps you can have recipes that refine your poison or concentrate your holy damage. And that power is just all related to the volume of loot. So this is just another take on the system, so that way. In order to like upgrade your skill rune, instead of gaining experience through playing, it's through your drops. And these little drops that might themselves individually not mean enough, you farm up enough of them, and you'll be able to permanently upgrade your skills through these items. And so again, it kind of ties the item system into the skill system, but making it the more you play the game, the more you can upgrade your skills, and if you mix and match elements, maybe it will have additional effects. In addition, borrowing from Minecraft, what if experience goes into a pool and it costs experience to do more powerful transmutations? Sure, you can change your poison 5 haunt skill to say a poison 5 fire 2, but that will cost you 5 levels worth of experience. And once you get to 70 or say 100, you can't go any higher, but excess experience kind of goes into a vault, which you can then use to modify skills or gear. Or you can regress from say level 20 to 10 in order to face roll a weapon at earlier levels. It's your choice. In addition, there might be some give or take, but let's say that there are vessels, excuse me, in which that you can allocate your experience, and once that vessel say one can reduce your cooldown, or one increases your crit chance, and this one is the attack speed. And so you can put that reservoir to augment a skill, and then you can say then pick a vessel, so that way you might be able to manipulate the skill power in that form. And if you're in say increasing the skill power of a large cooldown, maybe you just want to attack sacrifice attack speed. So that way you can get more cooldown reductions. So you can siphon from one stat into another. And then say, if you don't give a crap about cooldown, maybe you can drain all that cooldown stat and put it into more attack speed. Wow, I should charge consulting fees, Functropus. And this is another one, another interesting take on it is having an experience reservoir is a similar way of just say funneling experience that you gain into an individual skill or skill points. Though it's just, I guess, that one would kind of come down to what is the psychological aspect and how do players react to that? Do they have a more positive experience by saving up your experience until you gain a level, getting that skill point, and then immediately going through and say, throwing that into a rune on a skill, as opposed to, say, a Paragon level? Or would it be better that you sit there and you hoard up like 5 levels of experience, and then you channel all of that experience into upgrades? Something like God of War does, as you go through and you continue to pool souls, you can then spend those to upgrade your various weapons and abilities. I think that would probably go to, playtesting and the devs finding which do players react to better. If you just pool your experience, do they find that they just sit there and gain more and more levels, and they're afraid to, I don't want to spend all of my experience into this one, because I don't know if I'm gonna like it, as opposed to, well, let me just get a skill point, and it's not doing anything for me right now, so I'm just gonna throw it into here. We'll have to go through and wait and. wait and see on that one. Next email, this one comes from Mike. He has a ancient furnace that he wants to go through and show off, but he just says, "Hey guys, Mike here from Ontario, a noob. And this is my first ever playing Diablo 3 back in August. And that's around the same time that I found your podcast. And it is the shit, as opposed to being shit." I added that one in there. Every time I listen to an episode, it pumps me up to get my butt home at the end of the day with hopes of playing some D3. Though having a wife and a 1-year-old girl can make it a bit tricky sometimes. Anyway, just wanted to say you guys are awesome and keep it up. And in episode 134, you guys were talking about the furnace. Well, I finally got my first ever primal a few weeks ago. I'm super pumped to share it. And guess what? It's a furnace. I hope you like it. We always love ancient furnaces. Why would we not like ancient furnaces? We'll be showing that item here in just a second once we get to our items of the week. Just have a couple more emails to get through. We're back into March now. Pains me to say that, but we're getting there. Sup, fellas? This Sergeant Psycho going through and emailing in. Happily chilling in some non-season leveling gyms at my own pace. Some thoughts cross my mind while I speed grind GR85s. Question for the community. I don't know if anyone's mentioned it, so for all the Nephilim out there, what type of enemy do you just absolutely hate? For any reason you please, just curious. Mine are a tie between the accursed type, the ones that die in a poison cloud, and the jumpers, winged assassins, Lucani huntresses, and ones of that nature. The accursed are absolutely hated because I'm killing with great haste, and then if the poison cloud from the up-close enemy doesn't kill me, then I'm faced with an entire screen of toxic green. Don't they know I have a GR to finish on time? Side note with that, half the time the toxic screen of death, there's a whole batch of grotesques waiting on the other side if I vault through the cloud. The jumpers are hated because they just come out of nowhere and then it's FML, fuck my life, while I'm notified that my durability has been reduced by 10%. I'm just gonna throw it out there, it's better than your deeds of valor shall be remembered. An honorable mention are the burrowers because they're small, sneak in with the screen effects, they slice through my Achilles' heels. How's everyone's luck been with finding primals? I recently found my first Unhollowed Essence primal that I can use. On the flip side, I have helm, cloak, ring, gloves, and weapons of Nat's Vengeance. I just don't use that set, but it's hard to scrap them. To all the Nephilim all over Sanctuary, may the rest of your season 13 be lucky and your sets be primal. Well, thank you, Sergeant Psycho. It should come of no surprise when I say that my two most hated enemies are grotesques, because, well, fuck that loser. Making that topical. Dang it, what is it? The stone guys, the stone golems. The ones that reflect your ranged attacks, because nothing is worse than going through playing a ranged class, going through and seeing those stone golems all of a sudden go and pop up, and I have had a brownie thrown at me now. You can't see that on video. Thank you. I guess I should probably edit that out. Nah, we'll keep it. Those stone golems, because they just reflect everything back. And so you're sitting there playing your Impale Demon Hunter, or your Holy Hammer Crusader, and then you see them pop up, and it's like, well, let me just sit and wait. You do your thing, you little have your little, reflective cloud, and I'm just gonna burn the timer down. And even though it's only up for a couple seconds, it is by far the longest couple seconds that you'll ever play. Or you won't even notice some of the pack, and all of a sudden you've procced from nothing. Those guys suck. They suck a lot. I think that they should have some sort of balancing that reduces the damage of the reflected projectiles back at you, something along the lines of just like regular reflex mobs. But, whatever. Whatever. Diablo 3. We'll just have to grin and bear it. Grin and bear it. And we have one last email. This one goes through and comes in from Watson. I had a couple of questions here. First question, if there are two or more people that using Oculus Rings and they proc at the same time on top of each other, will you do even more damage as we're standing in more than one yellow aura at the same time? This one is a tricky question in that Oculus Rings used to be able to proc, and yes, if they just so happened to overlap, you could get stacking damage. But Oculus Rings now are basically tied to a shared internal cooldown that you shouldn't have more than one up at a time. And also now, if there ever is like a bug or something that does cause multiple circles to go through and proc, they no longer stack of one another. They are just a flat damage bonus, and if they do so happen to overlap, well, you're good, because it doesn't matter. There is still, you could still run into a situation where someone is using a legacy Oculus Ring, and those auras stack because they come from different spell IDs, but the graphics are the same, so if they don't overlap with one another, you're having to flip a coin and am I standing in the 100% damage buff or the 40% damage buff? And, well, I wouldn't risk it. You don't want to be wrong on that one. The second question is more of a lore-related question. Are all the people in Sanctuary considered Nephilim, or only the powerful ones? Why are the NPCs not as strong as the heroes, and if they are, also Nephilim? Yes and no. In essence, all of humans are Nephilim, but a should better state that is that we have the potential to become a Nephilim. While we are the ancestors of them, there is some sort of spiritual difference and separation between us and a true Nephilim. But within everybody is the spark or the potential to become a Nephilim. This is something that they go into a lot in the Sin War trilogy by Richard Knack, that just your regular commoners, even children, could have that spark awaken in them and become a Nephilim. To where they're actually able to, even like regular commoners, are able to go up toe to toe with some of the greatest mages of the time. And it is very interesting at where the difference lies in between, say, a powerful mage and a freshly awakened Nephilim. And that's something that I've asked the devs a couple of times and haven't really gotten a straight answer on that one. But I hope it's an aspect that they go through and explore in the future, that what better defines them. But the answer is yes, we have the potential to become Nephilim, but something has to happen to awaken that potential within all of us. And that's why, Kadala isn't going out there and killing greater Rift Guardians to collect blood shards on her own. And hopefully she never does, because then, as much as we all love to hate her, where are we going to get her gear if, she doesn't want our blood shards? And from that, we are done with our community emails, and we're going to go into items of the week. Week. It's a bit odd having to do that one solo, but well, I did it. I hope you enjoyed it. Aren't you thankful? And our first item of the week here is from Mike, as we hinted at earlier, his primal furnace. Of course, come on, it's an ancient or primal furnace. We have to show it. This bad boy clocks in at 3,922 DPS, rolled with 1,465 strength, 1,465 vitality, reduces the cooldown of all skills by 10%. Monster kills grant 260 experience, increases the damage against all elites by 50%, and of course, the Romulana ding dongs for a socket on that bad boy. Beautiful, beautiful thing. And hey, with Crusaders, it actually has some use now, potentially. The next item that we have here is going to start an interesting trend for tonight's episode. This one comes in from Blood Raider, of Primal Vengeful Wind, the Monk Fist, clocked in at 2,842 DPS, rolled with 1,000 dexterity, 540 life per spirit spent, reduces all resource costs by 10%, a 2.6% chance to blind, and increases the maximum stat count of Sweeping Wind by 7. Hasn't had anything re-rolled, no Happy Meal on there for a socket. And the killer is that this item was lost shortly thereafter as they ripped. So, ouch. Sorry to hear that. But that is a beautiful, beautiful item. Not to be undone, longtime listener Korova went through and sent in a vengeful wind as well. Also, of course, coming in at 2,842 DPS. 1,000 dexterity, rerolled for 1,000 vitality, 540 life per spirit spent, plus 15%, or plus 15 to maximum spirit, and increases the maximum stacks of sweeping wind by 7 with around Melodnes for a socket. Beautiful, beautiful set of items, and just interesting that we managed to go through and grab two vengeful winds in one episode. And a little bit different, our last and final item of the week here. Comes in from Shepard, and that's cosmic wings. They do exist. After countless amounts of grinding and rainbow goblins, Shepard finally got lucky, went through, and managed to get the cosmic wings. So big round of applause for everybody's favorite clanmate, Shepard. And congrats on those cosmic wings, sir. And with that, it brings us to a close. Thanks again for going through and joining us here on this episode. It's been a long and crazy 4 years of the show, and I really hope to go through and do another 4 years here as well. I do have a question for you as a community, if you want to go through and chime in. Since we're on the topic of anniversaries, what's your favorite moment been with Reaper of Souls? What is your favorite memory of Diablo 3 within the last 4 years? Kind of have an idea of what Shepard's might be based on that last screenshot there. But also, what is one of your favorite moments from an episode of the Westmarch Workshop over the last 4 years? We've been through quite a lot, our fair share of co-hosts and such. But Stephen and I would definitely like to know, go and hear more about your thoughts. Send us in westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com, and let us know what your favorite memory from both Reaper of Souls or the Westmarch Workshop is. And with that, we're going to go through and head out to the outro now. You can join us here at the show at twitch.tv/blizzpro every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And if you like what we do here, by feel free to go ahead and hit follow. There hasn't been too much going on the BlizzPro channel as of lately. Well Met is audio only now, and the Heroes Power Hour has become the BlizzPro Adventure Club on Tuesday nights, where they go and play a bunch of random games, sometimes Blizzard games, sometimes not. But you can always go through and check that out. We do a fair share of just hosting of fellow streamers and members of the BlizzPro community here on the website. You can also go through and check out a lot of Diablo news over at diablo.blizzpro.com. We are also in-game. We are the BlizzPro clan. And if you don't want to leave your current clan, you can always go through and check us out at the Westmarch Workshop community. We do also have a Discord. You can find us at discord.gg/blizzpro. You can even follow the show on Twitter at the WM Workshop. You can follow us individually. I am at NineBallGamer on Twitter, or twitch.tv/Nineball. Provided I can go through and get some of these internet issues situated, my work schedule within the next coming weeks might be freeing up a little bit, and I might actually have some time to stream. I don't know. Stranger things have happened. And of course, sir, not appearing in this episode, Mr. Leviathan. You can find him at LeviathanD3 on Twitter. Or you can find him at Leviathan111 on twitch.tv. And I'm sure he's been having some stuff going on, but after things kind of settle down after PAX East and such, you'll probably go through and be seeing more of him. But thanks for tuning in, and we have to hope to catch you on the next episode.